Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Sparity again. This is part two of part one, I guess. It's a long book. 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea by Jules Verne. I am once again joined by Kalina.
Hello.
And Brian.
Hey.
And Brian, you read this before once, right? Like a long time ago.
In like fourth grade or something like that. Yeah. Still looking for that squid from the cover.
We're still a little concerned what school you went to that let you read this in fourth grade.
It was definitely not this intense.
It was a public school, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I went to public school.
Well, we got more 20K Under the Sea coming to you now, starting with the next chapter. Chapter 13, The Black River. So they're in the Pacific Ocean. The narrator takes four paragraphs to explain this. The portion of the terrestrial globe which is covered by water is estimated upwards of 80 million acres. This fluid mass comprises a blah, 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 and basically boils down to we're in the Pacific Ocean. They surface and they go out onto the platform. Captain Nemo takes some measurements with a sextant. He's out there too. He's looking around with his device. And they go to the saloon, the drawing room area, and Nemo leaves Aronnax alone there. And Aronnax speaks about ocean currents for a couple paragraphs. So this is the narrator talking about, like, you know, some of the science of ocean currents and some actual facts about ocean currents and stuff. And then Ned Land and Conseil arrive, and they're obviously amazed by this boat. They haven't really talked to each other since the first meeting of the captain. And Ned asks, how many crew members are on this boat? And Aronnax says he actually has no idea, and they don't really see any. And they haven't seen any other than like the steward who brought them food and the one guy who was with Captain Nemo. They don't really see any crew members. They don't hear any either.
They had eight of them come down and get them though, right?
Yeah, they did. Yeah. So there was that moment too. So like they know there's multiple people on board, but like besides those moments where they're specifically encountering them, like because the crew is encountering them on purpose, they never see them like ever. So Aronnax says, yeah, that's weird, but, you know, we should all enjoy this chance to see such a modern marvel and, like, you know, marvel in the science rather than think about escaping. And while they're in the saloon, suddenly all the lights go out. It goes suddenly dark. And Ned Land cries out. He's upset. He doesn't know what's going on. And that's when suddenly the wall starts to move. And it opens up and it turns out that there's these huge, what they call saloon panels. There's these big panels and they slide apart and there's this huge glass wall that's basically like the world's largest live aquarium. And they turn the lights on so they can see and they are like looking out into the ocean from under the water. And so they're all stunned. They marvel at the sight. Even Ned, who was like super angry a second ago, he's stunned by this spectacular sight. They spend some time pointing out the names and classes of all the fish they see, because again, fish taxonomy, they love that stuff, and Aronnax is over the moon. He's so excited about this. They return to their chambers, and they eat a good dinner, and that's basically the end of that chapter.
Okay, I have a personal question.
For me?
Yeah, when you read this book, and they described all these different fish and aquatic animals that you didn't know, did you look them up when you didn't know that? Or did you just picture like goldfish and starfishes and like things in your head while you were reading it and you're like, all right, moving on?
No, I totally just, yeah, I just imagined fish because wow, the amount, the amount of species that they point out is crazy. The section in this chapter says, I distinguished the green labre, L-A-B-R-E, the banded mullet, marked by a double line of black, the round-tailed goby, of a white color, with violet spots on its back, the Japanese scombrus, a beautiful mackerel of those seas, with blue body and silvery head, the brilliant azurars, whose name comes blah blah blah, Japanese salamander, spider lamprey, serpent 6 feet long, like, they just go on and on and on.
It gives you the broad strokes. You're like, yeah, oh, a blue goldfish with a silver head. Oh, yeah. A white goldfish with purple spots. Cool.
Yeah, sometimes they don't even do that. They just start naming like Latin, like phylums and genuses, like taxonomy stuff. And it's like, yeah.
The Fishicus Aquaticus.
the Necronomica fish. I don't know. Chapter 14, A Note of Invitation. So it's November 9th, 1868. It's been 4 days since they left the Abraham Lincoln. And so Aronnax is nerding out over the specimens in the saloon. An entire day passes and they don't see Captain Nemo or any of the crew at all. And the next day is the same. So the next day they surface. Aronnax goes to the platform and there's still no Captain Nemo, but he can see the steersman in his glass case. The second in command, the short guy that was there on the first visit, when the two men first came to see them, one of them's Nemo, the second one is apparently his second in command. He comes up onto the surface and he acts like he doesn't see or hear Aronnax at all. He looks all around with a spyglass and then he announces a sentence to no one in particular in that same strange language. Quote, I have remembered it, for every morning it was repeated under exactly the same conditions, end quote. So apparently the second in command like always goes up, looks around, says like the same sentence, and then walks back down. 5 days go by with no change in the situation whatsoever. Every morning he goes up the platform, every morning the same phrase, the second in command comes up, says the same thing, and there's still no Captain Nemo. On the 16th of November, Aronnax receives a note. Captain Nemo invites the professor and his companions to a, quote, hunting party in the, quote, forests of the island of Crespo. So Aronnax finds his buddies and talks to them, and Ned is excited to go out to dry land again. They find Crespo. There's like this big map in the drawing room that like shows, I think it somehow shows like where they are, and it also shows like the world. They find Crespo on the map. The next day, Aronnax goes to the saloon, and Captain Nemo's there. They finally see him. And he doesn't mention why he's been gone and hasn't made no contact with them, and they think it better not to ask him. But they do eat breakfast together. They eat just like in awkward silence, like the whole time. And then all of a sudden, Nemo says, like just picking up a conversation from nowhere, says, quote, Sir, when I proposed to you to hunt in my submarine forest of Crespo, you evidently thought me mad. Sir, you should never judge lightly of any man. But Captain, believe me, be kind enough to listen, and you will see whether you have any cause to accuse me of folly and contradiction. End quote. So I don't know where the hell this came from. This seems like a bad editing mistake. I looked this up online. I couldn't find anything. So like at first they're like, oh, we're going to go to this forest of Crespo. And the three companions are like, oh, we're going to dry land. We're going to go to a forest. And then they eat breakfast and suddenly Captain Nemo says, hey, we're going to the submarine forest of Crespo and you thought I was crazy, but you shouldn't judge me like that. And he never says that. It doesn't say that in the book. I'm so confused by that.
It's just his insecurities.
He's crazy.
I guess.
He's been underwater too long.
Yeah, so apparently they're going to an undersea forest that Captain Nemo is like, how dare you disbelieve me, even though that never happened. This has got to be a bad edit or something. So Nemo explains how the underwater journey is going to work. They're going to go on an underwater hunting trip. He explains all the parts and the science of the underwater suits. They're going to wear these suits made of, quote, India rubber. And they're basically like, this is another one where I think Jules Verne is actually kind of prescient, because they're kind of like the old fashioned diving suits, but they're a little more modern than that. It's, you know, it's still ridiculous science fiction, but it's actually kind of neat how he comes up with this idea. So basically they wear these big rubber suits with like copper helmets, and they have air tanks and they have these big lights that work with a Ruhmkorff apparatus. Apparently there's back and forth questioning where, you know, Aronnax says, ah, but what about this? And Nemo says, oh, but it works like this and blah, blah, blah. And then finally, after this back and forth questioning, Aronnax says, quote, Captain Nemo, to all my objections, you make such crushing answers that I dare no longer doubt. End quote. I absolutely love you, Nemo. Please be my husband. I made that part up. So anyways,
it was between the lines.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, they were right.
They're so progressive for 1860.
Right? Good job, you guys. So he also asked, like, hey, if we're going hunting, what are we shooting with? Because, you know, there's like the water resistance of guns and stuff. And he says, oh, that's okay. We're going to use these super powerful air guns that shoot like these little metal balls that are charged with electricity, which is probably the most fantastical science fiction part of Jules Verne's work here, is these guns are ridiculous. they shoot like normal guns underwater, even though they're powered by air. And if anything, like they shoot this little steel ball, and if anything touches the steel ball, it like instantly dies.
Nice.
So anyways, they summon Ned and Conceal because they're like, all right, Aronnax and Nemo are done talking, and they all go to the airlock to go on their hunting trip. And that's the end of that chapter. Chapter 15, A Walk on the Bottom of the Sea. So there's a dozen diving suits hanging in this airlock. Ned says, oh, I'll never wear one of those things. He refuses. But Conceal says, I go where Aronnax goes, and so he's going to come along. And Nemo actually brings one of his crew members, which is crazy because they never see these people. Like I said, the suits are made of rubber. They're basically an old-timey diving suit. They got big copper helmets, and they got thick boots with lead soles that weigh them down. There's like copper bands in the suit to resist pressure. They explain some of the science of this. And the metal helmet screws on, and there's the big Ruhmkorff light hanging off the suit. But there's no communication means between each other. They don't have like, radios or anything like that. So once you put the head on, the helmet on, you can't talk to the other people. They got their air guns with their electric bullets. Everyone's geared up, and the airlock opens. Sun is shining through the water, so they can still see from the sunlight, and Aronnax is, of course, amazed by the sights of the seafloor, rocks, plants, algae, polyps, all this stuff. There's several paragraphs of describing all this stuff and how cool it is. Nemo leads them on. They're walking along. They walk for almost 2 hours. They're about what Aronnax reckons about 150 yards deep. So there's a large dark mass ahead as they're walking, and Aronnax concludes, oh, that must be his forest of the island of Crespo. And that's the end of the chapter. Pretty uneventful, but they do start their little expedition. Chapter 16, A Submarine Forest. So there are, quote, large tree plants, end quote. There's these huge plants coming up from the bottom of the ocean. They're perfectly straight up and down, and they look really weird. It's this crazy sight. There's lots of weird animals and plants and that sort of stuff. So they're looking around at this, and they walk for another hour along the bottom of the ocean. When suddenly Nemo holds his hand up, signals to stop, and they rest under this underwater tree. They still can't talk to each other, but Nemo decides, oh, we're all going to rest here. And they literally sit there in their diving suits, and they all, like, take a nap in their diving suits, which is crazy. It appears to be about the afternoon when Aronnax wakes up, and suddenly there's this monstrous, quote, sea spider next to him, and it freaks him out terribly. He thinks he's about to be attacked. But all of a sudden, Nemo appears and clubs it with his gun and kills it. And he's super thankful.
Oh, my God. And he saved his life.
I know. It's done. The love points for Nemo. Conceal's got to pick it up. This is not going well for him.
I know. It's done.
So they keep going. They're walking along farther and deeper down a slope, deeper and deeper, deep enough that it's dark. So much so that they have to turn on their lights. And Aronnax is stunned and amazed by the lights. It makes like a 36-yard diameter, he says, area of light. It's just this hugely powerful lights. So they're walking along the surface, the bottom of the ocean, and they run into a cliff. And he assumes, oh, this must be the base of the island of Crespo. And Nemo uses a hand signal and says, all right, it's time to turn around. And they walk back towards the ship and the surface for a long time. So far, their hunt has not been going well. But then suddenly, Captain Nemo shoulders his gun and shoots because he sees something. Pow! And this bolt comes out this little ball comes out, and he realizes, oh, he's killed a sea otter, which, you know, now you're like, ah, but in 1870, you're like, ah, yes, dominate that nature, kill that wildlife. Yes, yes. This is another recurring pattern. They're going to be everyone in this book is dreadfully excited to kill everything that moves. So they take their sea otter and they continue on. And then, quote, on this occasion, I was witness to one of the finest gunshots which ever made the nerves of a hunter thrill. End quote. So Nemo's companion sees something moving up above and points his gun straight up and shoots. And he actually shoots an albatross out of the air from above the water.
Oh, damn.
And they're like, yay, you know, we killed another thing. Woo, 1800s, high five. and they finally see the Nautilus ahead. So Nemo is leading everyone, but then he turns around, he rushes back, and he gives this hand signal, everyone get down. And so everyone gets down, and they stay still, and these two huge sharks swim over their heads. But they don't notice them, and nothing happens. Then they go back to the ship, and they take off their gear and return to their cabins, and that's the end of the chapter.
I can't believe they're going to go eat that otter.
Oh, they're totally going to eat it. Yeah. No, it's funny because you know how I said that, oh, he keeps describing all these fish and that kind of stuff. There's actually a lot of wildlife where he describes what it looks like, its scientific name, and what it tastes like. Like this, he does that a lot. Yeah.
I wonder if this guy actually did do like taste testing of things.
Right. He's like, excuse me, I have to eat like everything. He goes up to some museum and he's like, can I taste that, please?
Do you guys have any dolphin? Okay, but like the math and stuff's pretty accurate. Look, it wouldn't surprise me if he went to those lengths.
Plus, it is 1870, so of course he goes to like his local fishmonger and he's like, do you have any dolphin? And he's like, do I?
Yeah, right.
Chapter 17, 4,000 Leagues Under the Pacific. So, it's the 18th of November, and Aronnax goes up to the platform, and there's that same first mate guy who looks around, says the same phrase, goes back under, same as always. Captain Nemo arrives, and he acts like he doesn't notice Aronnax at all. You'll notice this is a pattern. Like, the Captain Nemo and his whole crew only acknowledge Aronnax and his companions like when they're explicitly supposed to, and Captain Nemo ignores them a lot. And Aronnax tries to be respectful and, you know, doesn't, like, want to break the silence. So some other sailors come up, too, some of the crewmen. And they're pulling in nets from the surface. He makes, like, a quick evaluation of the crewmen. And they appear to be multi-ethnic, multinational. So there isn't, like, oh, everybody here is, like, from some country or everybody here is from some nationality. They appear to be just all over the globe. And when they do speak to each other, they only speak in that strange language ever. So they pull in all these nets because this is how they collect some of their food. And the nets are done. And then suddenly Nemo notices Aronnax purposefully. And he talks passionately about the ocean, how great the ocean is. And I've dedicated my life to this and blah, blah, blah. And then he talks about the speculative idea of an ideal underwater civilization. But then he ends his little story of like, you know, basically Bioshock with, quote, yet who knows whether some despot. And then he trails off and he changes the subject. So this is another hint about like Nemo's potential past. So he changes the subject and asks Aronnax, why don't you tell me everything you know about the ocean? Which, of course, he does. So weeks go by. As they're on this boat, and they very seldom see the captain. But those big aquarium saloon panels are opened almost every day. So while they don't really see anybody, Aronnax and his buddies get to watch like a lot of undersea stuff, and they're still amazed by all the marvels and blah, blah, blah. And then there's this really long, boring paragraph. This is another thing they do a lot, where they do like a lot of captain's log stuff, where, I mean, if you really like tracking them on the map, it is accurate with the map, but like there's a lot of this where, quote, at 3 o'clock in the morning on the 26th of November, the Nautilus crossed the Tropic of Cancer at 172 degrees long. On 27th instant, it sighted the Sandwich Islands, where Cook died, February 14th, 1779. We had then gone 4,860 leagues from our starting point. It crossed the equator December 1st in 142 degrees long. It goes on like this for a long time. And he always lists the fish. Everywhere they go, oh, we were at this degrees and this minutes in this, you know, area of the world, and there was all these fish. And he does this all the time. So they go past Hawaii. They go past French Polynesia. So finally, it's December. It's December 11th. Conseil gets Aronnax, and he says, dude, you have to come see this. Come here. And through the glass, they can see a sunken ship. And it's apparently only been sunken for like less than a day. Because there are still people on board who are dead.
Oh, it's their ship.
Oh, no.
There are still... No, it's not. Spoilers. It's not. So there are several people that are still clearly visible in their dying moments. Listen to this quote. Quote, sadder still was the sight of the bridge, where some corpses, bound with ropes, were still lying. I counted five. Four men, one of whom was standing at the helm, and a woman standing by the poop. Holding an infant in her arms, she was quite young, end quote.
Graphic.
So that's dark as fuck, just like out of nowhere.
I read this at 10? The hell?
They probably didn't include that book in the abridged version.
Right.
But
yeah, that's. I was like, damn, what kind of fucking elementary school did Brian go to?
Chapter 18, Vanikoro. So... there's this terrible event that just happened. They just witnessed this. And this is really, if you want to get the gist of the book, this is another good paragraph that gets the gist of the book. Quote, "This terrible spectacle was the forerunner of the series of maritime catastrophes that the Nautilus was destined to meet with in its route. As long as it went through more frequented waters, we often saw the hulls of shipwrecked vessels that were rotting in the depths, and deeper down, cannons, bullets, anchors, chains, and a thousand other iron materials eaten up by rust. However, on the 11th of December, we sighted the Pomotu Islands, the old dangerous group of Bougainville, quack, quack, blah, blah, blah." Like, he just shifts gears and he's like, yep, that was awful. Anyway, and he's back to describing the captain's log and like where they've been and the fish again. He talks about coral for several paragraphs, like right after this. It's just like, oh, there's this horrible sight and there's this lady with her baby and they're dead underwater. But yeah, you know, there's coral and stuff. So whatever.
There's coral. So the oceans aren't dead yet.
Right. So he's right back to business. After having crossed the Tropic of Capricorn in 135 degrees longitude, it sailed west, northwest, blah, blah, blah. He's like right back to this. So yeah, all that horrible stuff with those people dead on the boat. Yeah, just forget about that. Anyway, so December 15th, they're at Tahiti. December 25th, Christmas, they're at New Hebrides, Pacific Islands. And he basically makes a short mention that like Ned Land is sad they're missing Christmas, but that's like the only mention he makes of that. December 27th, Captain Nemo hasn't been seen for a week at this point, and then he just casually shows up. This is a trend. He, you know, the whole crew disappears. They never see anyone. And then all of a sudden, Captain Nemo, when he wants to be found, is found. And Nemo goes up to Aranax, and he puts his finger on the map, and he just points, and he just says, he's very cryptic like this. He just says, Vanikoro. But of course, Aranax is like this super sea scholar, so he gets really excited at the word, because he knows what this means. This is where, this is a real world event. There was a French expedition in the late 1700s called La Pérouse expedition, and there were three ships sent out and they all sunk. And this is where that happened. And so Aranax is like, oh, we're at the place where these ships sunk, and he's super excited. So they go up to the surface and they see the island and some natives on the island. Of course, they call them savages, right? This book was written in 1870. Gear up for some of this stuff. So Captain Nemo asks what Aranax knows about the La Pérouse expedition. And of course, Aranax knows all of it. He spends the next 16 paragraphs of this book explaining the entire history of the La Pérouse expedition. So if you want to know the history of the La Pérouse expedition, this might be the book for you again. But yeah, so the gist of it is this. It's a real world event. It actually happened. 1785, there's this French expedition with this guy named Jean-François de La Pérouse, who's sent by Louis XVI on an expedition. They all disappear. Several ships were sent looking for them, and they found evidence of wrecked ships. And finally, in 1828, like 50 years later, they find definitive evidence. And they talked to some of the natives, and the natives said that, oh yeah, there was this French guy, La Pérouse, here. He constructed another boat in an attempt to escape, but then that boat was lost, too. Captain Nemo takes them to the saloon and opens the panels, and they can see the wreckage of the boats. So this is like definitive wrecked evidence of these boats, which is, you know, like a huge triumph. He shows Aranax this box that has papers signed by Louis XVI himself that like proves that this is the actual wreck because he recovered this earlier. So Aranax is over the moon. What an incredible find. And they start talking about dying under the sea. And here's another quote from Nemo. Quote, "Ah, it is a fine death for a sailor," said Captain Nemo at last. Quote, "A coral tomb makes a quiet grave, and I trust that I and my comrades will find no other," end quote. And that's the end of the chapter. That's basically it for that chapter.
Roller coaster.
Did he just say him and his crew are gonna die at sea?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, he did.
Man, this guy is just like... He is just a roller coaster. Oh my god.
Dogmatic.
Yeah, Nemo's an interesting character, I gotta admit. Chapter 19, The Torres Straits. So it's New Year's Day, 1868, and Conseil and Aranax are on the platform. I think they're on the platform. And Conseil wishes Aranax a happy new year. And he says that he's not bored of the wonders that they're encountering yet. And Conseil says, quote, "We are sure to see curious things, and for the last 2 months we have not had time for dullness. The last marvel is always the most astonishing, and if we continue this progression, I do not know how it will end. It is my opinion that we shall never again see the like, end quote. So they're still like amazed with all this spectacle that they're seeing. So they go through the Torres Straits, which is this area that's apparently like really rough and rocky islands in the ocean. They get very close to an island, and then suddenly there's a shock. The whole ship shakes. And they start to take assessment of the situation, and it turns out the Nautilus is now stuck on a rock. It can't move. And so they go out on the platform, they start looking around, and Aronnax asks Nemo, he's like, well, it looks like we're screwed now. And Nemo says, no, we're fine. The ocean gets very, you know, there's huge tides here. In 5 days, the moon will be in the right position, and in 5 days, we should be able to leave again. So Aronnax tells this to Ned and Conseil, and Ned's like, ah, there's no way this Nautilus is stuck for good. I've seen ships run aground, and there's no way this thing is stuck. And he thinks they should leave. He thinks they should escape. And Aronnax says, where are you going to go? We're in the middle of nowhere. So they decide, he's like, yeah, you're right. And they decide against that. So Ned and Conseil decide, you know what? If we're stuck here, we want to go see land again. We want to go hunting on land. And so Aronnax actually gets up the gusto to go ask Captain Nemo, hey, can we go on a hunting trip? And Nemo says, sure, yeah, you can. And they're all surprised by this, that Nemo's just going to let them go on the land.
Because he has a soft spot for him.
I know, it's his love affair. Mm-hmm. So they take their electric guns and some hatchets and the little boat, and they go over to the island. This is actually the island of New Guinea. Ned is super excited about real meat. They land on the shore, and that's the end of that chapter. Chapter 20, A Few Days on Land. So they're all excited to be on land. They've been on the boat for a very long time, of course. Ned knocks down some coconuts out of some trees, and they eat them, and they're super happy about the coconuts and some food that isn't, like, fish. They decide they really need some fruit, vegetables, and meat. They all agree on this. Especially meat. Ned says he wants meat so bad that, quote, I begin to understand the charms of anthropophagy, end quote. There's a word for you that means cannibalism. He like hints at like the idea of cannibalism. Part of this is, you know, just him saying how much he wants meat. And part of this is kind of a jab at the 1800 perception of Southeast Island natives. It gets worse. You just wait on that front. Ned, Conseil, and Aronnax are on the island. They search the forest and they find this fruit called breadfruit that Ned has seen before. And he says, oh, it's so good. He's going to cook it up. And they eat some. They find edible plants, they go around the island, and then they go back on their boat, they go back to the Nautilus, and they sleep. And when they wake up, this quote, the next day, 6th January, nothing new on board, not a sound inside, not a sign of life. So the Nautilus is still stuck on a rock, but when they go back, it's like there's no one there at all, because their crew is like super mysterious, and they don't see Nemo or anybody again.
Have either of you had breadfruit?
No. Have you?
Yes.
Really?
It's fantastic.
And I kind of thought it was bread shaped like fruit.
No, it's fruit where like the flesh of the fruit is like bread. It's like a bread-like consistency. But I've had it in Jamaica. It's like my family's made breadfruit for, you know, holidays and stuff.
Does it taste like it sounds? Is it like an English pudding or like a custard? Like a, you know what I mean?
It's like a I don't know, like a soft bready kind of consistency. It's like a, I don't know, like heavy kind of layered, and it's bland, like super bland. I think we eat it with like salt and stuff, but you cook it in a pressure cooker, if I recall correctly.
Oh.
Anyway, I had to bring it up. It's a weird fruit.
I have two questions. Have you ever tried eating it with butter, like bread and butter?
Only after toasting it, of course.
Oh, well, that was going to be my second question. It's like, have you ever tried to toast it?
I have to imagine that'd be pretty good. I don't think it'd absorb butter like bread would absorb butter.
If you make bread out of breadfruit, like banana bread, does it become bread?
I think it would have to be called bread.
Oh, man. Anyway.
Taylor's cookbook coming next year.
Disparity cookbook.
Bread from 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. Ned definitely doesn't make bread. They just fry it up in a fire and eat it. But anyway. So they go back to shore. They decide they're going to go on another hunting trip, and no one's there to stop them. So they do. They see a lot of parrots. They find some birds of paradise. Aranax goes on about the birds of paradise. He's like super excited about it. And of course, these are 1800s gentlemen, so they are trying to kill everything they see with the utmost intensity. So they shoot at the birds of paradise, and they don't manage to hit any of them. Aranax is kind of disappointed they didn't get any. But then Conseal manages to kill some pigeons. They eat those, more breadfruit. And then Conseal says, hey, look, Aranax, and he's managed to catch a live bird of paradise, which Aranax is over the moon. So romance points for Conseal because he gets Aranax a present of live bird of paradise. Aranax says, how did you catch this thing? And Conseal says, oh, it was really easy. Look, apparently these things eat nutmeg seeds. And nutmeg seeds make the birds very drunk. And so he just finds this drunk bird of paradise and picks it up.
Dude, I remember this. This is like Memories Unlocked, the podcast.
Oh my God.
Do you remember this, Kalina, from the book you made up in your head?
No. But you know what? I want to see drunk birds. That sounds really cool. I've seen a video where there were a bunch of birds. I don't know how they got drunk, but they were knocked out on the sidewalk. So tourists or like people walking by just pick them up and put them on the side, like put them on the grass. And I'm like, yeah, look at that. Faith in humanity restored.
Dude, drunk birds are the cool birds. They're the birds that just want to chill with you. So later on, they find a wild hog. Ned shoots it and he's very happy about it. They're going to eat the hog. And then they flush out some what they call tree kangaroos. Actually, I think in the book they just called them kangaroos, but they're tree kangaroos because there's no like Australian kangaroos here in New Guinea. And they kill 12 of them. They're super excited about that. Quote, I think that in the excess of his joy, the Canadian, if he had not talked so much, would have killed them all. But he contented himself with a single dozen of these interesting marsupials. Happy Ned proposed to return to this enchanting island the next day, for he wished to depopulate it of all the eatable quadrupeds. End quote. Yeah, fuck that nature. Okay. Get him, 1800 guides.
Killer.
I could Google it, but what is a tree kangaroo in comparison to a real kangaroo, like an Australian one? Like, is it that same size? Or like, is it tiny? Yeah.
Koala?
Yeah, I had to Google it too because it said, oh, they got kangaroos. And I'm like, it said they're on New Guinea. There's no kangaroos in New Guinea. But there's like these little like, oh gosh.
Like, I want to know, is 12 excessive or is 12 like, yeah, this is enough for like a meal for like four people. That's pretty good, you know? Or is it like, oh my God, one would fill all of us up?
They're like rhino-sized tree kangaroos.
Yeah, no, you know what a red panda is?
Yeah.
They're kind of like that.
Aww.
Yeah, which makes it that much worse because they're kind of cute. God, yeah, they're like fluffy and like house cat to dog sized. Yeah.
Delicious red pandas.
And that's also why you need 12 of them. You know
what? I think that's his problem. I think he just needs to have a little friend companion. Has he tried taming one and bringing it on board with him? I'm sure that he would no longer miss society or... Oh my God, wait, no, he would get hungry. Never mind, abort.
Yeah, then he can't shoot his cool electric gun or throw his harpoon and be Ned.
Yeah, but he'd have a heart that grew 10 sizes that day. I don't actually know how big it is, but 10 sounds right.
So they go back to shore and they get a campfire and Ned's cooking all his meat. He's super excited about all the stuff they killed and all of them are pretty happy about it. When all of a sudden, a rock lands near them with force. And that's the end of the chapter.
So the tree kangaroos are fighting back.
Yeah, totally.
Must be.
Chapter 21, Captain Nemo's Thunderbolt. So they're trying to figure out where this rock came from. And then Conseal is like eating a pigeon and another rock. Why is that so funny?
Just casually, everyone's trying to figure out where they like where this rock came from, and Conceal's just like, in my head, I just imagined like him standing there just like with a pigeon in hand, and he just takes a bite out of it.
Yeah, right. I imagine him standing there be like, did you guys hear something? I'm sorry, I was just eating this pigeon. So he's holding this pigeon in his hand, and then another rock actually knocks the pigeon leg out of Conceal's hand. So they're apparently being attacked, and all of them get up, and they're all on edge. And, oh man, I put this quote in here, because it definitely dates the book, in case you're wondering about the age and tone of the book. Quote, "Are they apes?" cried Ned Land. "Very nearly. They are savages." End quote. Okay. Yeah. Oof. Yeah. So, anyway, they run back to their little boat, and they start paddling back towards the Nautilus. About 20 natives appear out of the trees, with bows and slings and throwing rocks and stuff. Ned grabs his pig that he killed, and he gets a few of the kangaroos and goes, go, 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 and jumps in the boat, and they cast off. By the time they get out in the water, now there's about 100 natives on the beach attacking them. So they make it back to the Nautilus, and they go down inside. And Captain Nemo, they find him in there playing the organ. He's in this reverie playing the organ, so absorbed that he doesn't really notice. But Aronnax gets his attention, and he says, hey, the natives attacked us. There's natives on the island, and they attacked us. And he says, oh, the savages attacked. And this is another little insight into Captain Nemo's character. Quote, savages, he echoed ironically. So you are astonished, Professor, at having set foot on a strange land and finding savages. Savages, where are there not any? Besides, are they worse than others, these men whom you call savages? End quote. Yeah, so that like kind of speaks to his Captain Nemo's kind of inner opinions about things. So Captain Nemo says, by the way, don't worry about it. The Nautilus is going to be completely invulnerable to their attacks. And he just goes back to playing the organ. He doesn't care. And they go to bed, and Aronnax is waiting like for possibly something bad to happen. The natives show up, but the night passes uneventfully. They don't even, they hear like some people moving outside, but nothing bad happens. The next morning, they go up top and they look around, and now there's like 500 or 600 natives on the shore. And some of them are like walking out in the low tide towards the Nautilus. And there's no boats around, but they're like walking out. And about 11 a.m., they give it up and they return back to the shore. So Aronnax goes to look at the fishes, and he goes up to the top and he's going to look at the fish coming in the nets. He's up there with Conceal and they're looking in the nets because they're bored because they're still stuck. And now they can't go to the island. They're trying to find something to do. So they go up to the nets, and Aronnax finds something in the net. He like darts his hand in there, and he reacts like he cuts himself or something. Conceal says, what happened, master? Did you get bitten or something? And Aronnax says, no, but look at this. And he finds this shell that has a left hand turn instead of a right hand turn. Ooh. Which is like, I guess if you're a shell aficionado, it's like a hell of a thing, because apparently this is super rare. And he says, quote, shells are all right-handed with rare exceptions. And when by chance their spiral is left, amateurs are ready to pay their weight in gold. End quote. So apparently it's like a super valuable shell. So while they're looking at the shell, a rock from a native sling hits it out of his hand and breaks it into a million pieces.
This is why we can't have nice things.
Yep.
Yeah. So Conceal's like, oh, Master's shell, and he's pissed. He gets up, pulls his gun up, and shoots at this native with his gun.
Oh, my God.
You know, that's right? Just a measured response.
Yeah, he went from 0 to 100.
You got to remember, he's really trying to get points on Nemo as the favorite. This might be driven by love. But yeah, so he stands up, shoots this native. The native has a bunch of bracelets on his arm, and apparently he hits the bracelets and doesn't end up hurting or killing the native, which is lucky. And the gun doesn't really make, it's an air gun. It doesn't make a lot of sound. Aranax comments on this because he said, oh, if it was a real gun, the sound would have scared all the natives away, but it's not. So it didn't make any sound, so it didn't scare anybody away. So not only are the natives not scared by a big sound, now they're actually kind of pissed. And suddenly they notice, they didn't think the natives had any canoes, but now there's canoes. And they're like surrounded by canoes. And then all of a sudden there's this huge hail of arrows from all around and arrows start hitting the Nautilus. So Aranax and Conseil go down inside. Aranax finds the captain and says, we're under attack and all this stuff. The captain pushes a button to close the hatches, closes the top of the Nautilus. And he says, don't worry, the problem's solved. But Aranax says, well, now we're trapped here. How are we going to refill the Nautilus with air when all the natives are like climbing on top of this boat? And then there's this quote, then, sir, you suppose that they will board us? And Aranax says, I am certain of it. And Nemo says, well, sir, let them come. I see no reason for hindering them. After all, these Papuans are poor creatures, and I am unwilling that my visit to the island should cost the life of a single one of these wretches. End quote. So this is like pretty progressive for an 1800s person to say like, oh, yeah, these are poor creatures and wretches and they're useless, but I'm not going to kill them. I guess that's. That's pretty advanced. Good for you, Nemo.
Good guy, Nemo.
Good guy, Nemo.
Kinda.
He's got the little plaid hat and the cigarette.
He's the best we got.
Yeah.
He's the best we got.
So Aranax and Nemo talk for a while, and then Nemo says, tomorrow afternoon, don't worry. That's when the water's going to rise up, the tide will come back, and then the Nautilus will float again, and we can leave. So... that night, they can hear the natives trying to break in. They're really trying to get into the Nautilus now, but they can't break in, so the night passes again uneventfully. They don't get actually attacked. So the next day rolls around, and they still can't open their hatches because there's still natives crawling all over the boat. So now they're on an emergency air reserves because they can't open their top to refuel their air. So around afternoon, Nemo says, all right, the water's back. We can leave now. And he also says, I've ordered the hatches to be opened. And Aranax says, whoa, the natives are still up there. They're going to charge in and try to kill us. And Nemo says, nope, don't worry about it. Follow me. And he takes him to like the stairs that lead up to the platform. And quote, the port lids were pulled down outside. 20 horrible faces appeared. But the first native, who placed his hand on the stair rail, struck from behind by some invisible force, I know not what, fled, uttering the most fearful cries and making the wildest contortions. 10 of his companions followed him. They met with the same fate. End quote. So a few of the natives are like, all right, it's open, let's charge in. And they try to charge in, and they basically get knocked backwards, and then they run off, like, cursing. So they're watching this, and Ned comes around the corner, basically, and he looks up and sees the natives, and he gets his harpoon. He's like, oh, I'm going to go fight them. And he runs towards the staircase, and he grabs the stair rail and is blown back onto his ass. And he says, quote, I am struck by a thunderbolt, end quote. So,
Nemo's Thunderbolt.
So, yeah. So Nemo's using his mighty, endless, super magic electricity to, like, electrify the entrance and the stairs. And it's keeping the natives away. And then the water rises up, and the Nautilus can now go back in the water, and they leave. And that's the end of the chapter.
I'm impressed he knew how much to shock them with to not kill them.
He invented the taser.
You gotta figure there was one or two guys, when he first lit that thing up, that he's like, all right, I need you to make sure this is non-lethal. So you go touch it. Chapter 22, Agrisomnia. So Aranax's confidence in the Nautilus is now sky high. He feels like there's nothing that it can't do. This is the wonder of the world, and it's native proof and all this stuff. So we're back to Captain's log stuff, where he basically says dates and coordinates. This is where we are. This degree is this longitude around this time. If you want to track him on the map, you can. The 11th of January, they're around Australia. Nemo is now occasionally doing water temperature experiments. And Aranax says, oh, well, since we're underwater, we can be so much more accurate. And he's so impressed by this, blah, blah. So one day they're going slow. And Aranax suspects, oh, the crew must be making repairs. But they still don't see any crewmen. So the saloon hatches are open. The sea is lit up by tons of glowing jellyfish. And there's like several paragraphs of this because it's like a big spectacle. All these glowing jellyfish. They see lots of cool fish. And it just goes on. To sum it up, it's a good quote here. Quote, "So we progressed, incessantly charmed by some new marvel. The days passed rapidly away, and I took no account of them." End quote. So they're basically just sailing, but Aranax is having a great time. It's January 18th, 1868. They're way out in the middle of the ocean. Aranax goes to the platform. He sees the same second lieutenant, does the same thing with, he says, he looks around, does the little phrase, the little word. But today's words are different than the phrases that he says usually, like every day. And he goes back down into the Nautilus and he comes back up and Captain Nemo follows him. And Captain Nemo's got a telescope and they start talking to each other quietly in their own little language. And Captain Nemo looks out with his telescope where the other guy is pointing. Aranax looks with his bare eyes. He doesn't have a telescope. He doesn't see anything. But clearly the second lieutenant guy and Nemo are worried about this, talking back and forth in their little language. The lieutenant's super upset. He's like stamping his foot. Nemo makes an order, and Aranax can tell the Nautilus is now traveling faster. So Aranax goes downstairs and gets his own telescope real quick and comes back up and looks, and Nemo snatches the telescope out of his hand and is super pissed at him. So Nemo says Aranax and his companions have to adhere to the deal. Like, I'm gonna cash in on this deal. You guys have to go to your quarters and you're not allowed to leave. And Aranax basically says, "Sir, can I ask one question?" And Nemo just says, "No."
Ooh.
What a power move.
Yeah.
Where's this?
I know, right?
I know who the top is.
I know, right? Now it's just a matter of what Aranax likes. Because, yeah, Nemo has staked his claim.
Go to your room.
So four crew members actually show up. And they take Aranax and his friends, and they put them all back in the room they were first captured in, and close it on them, close the door. The same silent steward brings them some food, and they all eat, but they're still stuck in here. And while they're waiting and trying to figure out what's going on, the overhead light in this room goes out, and they're in complete darkness again. Ned and Conseil just kind of fall straight asleep without really discussing what's going on or anything. And Aranax thinks this is pretty weird, and he's about to fall asleep too, but then he realizes he's been drugged. The reason why he's having trouble staying awake and the reason why Ned and Conseil fell asleep so quickly is they've all been poisoned. And that's the end of the chapter.
I think they saw people.
It was the red pandas coming back for revenge.
It was the tree kangaroo.
They had to keep them away from Ned.
Right. Said, "Oh,
go to your room. You've caused enough problems.
The savages, no big deal. Wait, you didn't mess with the tree kangaroos, did you? Oh God,
they're immune to electricity. You fool. We're all dead." Chapter 23: The Coral Kingdom. Aranax wakes up, and he's feeling fine, and he's in his own room. Apparently, he's been moved. Oddly enough, his door isn't locked. He's not trapped in his room. So he goes up to the platform, and Ned and Conseil are already there. They also woke up in their own rooms, too. But nothing major seems to have happened that they can tell. While they're up there, the second lieutenant, like he always does, comes up, says his little words, and goes back down. So it seems like everything's back to normal, and there's no sign of Captain Nemo. And so all of them are just kind of left puzzling what happened. So later that day, Aranax is working in the library in the area with like all the desks and stuff. And then Captain Nemo shows up and he is not in his normal state. He seems sad and tired, exhausted. He's like pacing around nervously. He tries to do like his normal things of like reading and reading his instruments and that sort of stuff, but he can't. He's just switching between them, and he's obviously restless. And then suddenly out of nowhere, he just asks Aranax, "Hey, are you a doctor?" And Aranax is like, "What?" And he goes, "Are you a doctor?" And Aranax says, "Yeah, he used to be a practicing doctor and surgeon." And Nemo comes clean a little bit and says, "Look, I have a crew member that needs your help, and I need you to help him." And Aronnax says, okay, sure. So Aronnax isn't dumb. He kind of suspects that something happened, and he suspects maybe an injured crewmate has something to do with what happened the day before. So he goes to this room, like this, these quarters, and there's this guy on a bed. He's like a middle-aged white guy, and he's obviously wounded. His head is bandaged. Aronnax goes in to investigate, and Nemo says, please check him out. And he pulls his bandages back, and his skull is damaged so bad his brain is exposed. And Aronnax asks, what caused this? And Nemo totally dodges the question. And instead he asks, what's your evaluation? What do you think is going to happen? And Aronnax says, this guy's got 2 hours to live.
Man, so he is Nemo such actually a bad negotiator. He's just like
Aronnax, you mean?
Yeah, well, like he's like he could have gotten so many answers because like he's like, oh, like what, you know, what's the diagnosis here? And he could have been like, well, what happened? I need to know more to tell you what the diagnosis is.
He could have been like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'll tell you if you tell me.
Yeah, he's not a great negotiator. Obviously. I can't believe this.
He's got to be a good sub. That's the problem.
True.
So Aronnax tells him this guy's going to die, and Nemo is actually overcome to emotion to the point his eyes filled with tears, which is something that no one has ever, like Aronnax and his buddies have never seen. And Aronnax just goes back to his room, and he's like really bothered by this event. That whole thing was really weird. Quote, during the whole day, I was haunted by uncomfortable suspicions, and at night I slept badly, end quote. So, the next morning, Aronnax meets Nemo on the bridge. Like, you know, the important part of the boat or whatever. Nemo says they're going for an undersea walk. And he says Conseil and Ned can come too. So, they're about 30 feet deep. And they put on all their diving gear, same as before. And there's the three main characters, Nemo, and 12 crew members all get in diving gear. And they go out on the seafloor in, like, this fairly shallow spot. And Aronnax sees they're in this huge coral area. There's a lot of coral. He calls it the Coral Kingdom. He describes the coral and the plants for like a couple paragraphs because he can't resist. Of course he does. And they start walking deeper into the ocean. They start walking for like 2 hours. And by this time, they're way deep. They describe it as 300 yards deep. There are amongst these huge coral tree-like structures. The coral gets thicker and bigger. And then eventually, when they're amongst all this coral, there's coral all around them. They stop. And the crew that's following them form like this big semicircle around Nemo. And Aronnax realizes they're carrying something big and the others have pickaxes. And that's when he realized they're carrying the dead guy. This is his funeral. So the crew uses their pickaxes and they dig a big hole in the coral in front of this big coral cross, like a Christian cross. And they put him in. And then all the crew kneels. And then they all bury him with coral. Nemo and his men all give like these last kneels and gesture of respect and prayer. Again, no one can talk because they got all their diving gear on. And they walk back to the Nautilus.
Aw, that's kind of sweet.
Yeah, right on.
So Aronnax goes up to the platform and Nemo goes up to join him. So they're standing on the platform and Nemo is like trying not to be emotional. He's kind of trying not to cry, but then he's also involuntarily crying while Aronnax is talking to him. And Aronnax asks if he has any other companions that are buried in the coral. And the chapter ends with Nemo saying, quote, our peaceful cemetery is there, some 100 feet below the surface of the waves. And Aronnax says, your dead sleep quietly, at least, Captain, out of the reach of sharks. And Nemo says, yes, sir, of sharks and men. End quote. And that's the end of part one, everybody.
Woo!
Wow.
Yeah.
This book is not going how I thought it was going to go at all.
Yeah? Why is that?
Well, they're in a metal submarine. I thought there was going to be a Kraken. There's still no Kraken.
Oh, right. That's one thing that I actually figured out. I felt like kind of an idiot, and I'm not sure if... I mean, to be fair, Jules Verne wrote Journey to the Center of the Earth, right? Which is absurd in its story. It's definitely more fantasy than science fiction. But I thought this book meant 20,000 leagues under the sea, as in 20,000 vertical leagues down.
Mm-hmm.
which is impossible to do, obviously. It actually means traveling 20,000 leagues around the world while under the sea.
Cool.
Okay, number one, yeah. Spoilies. Number two, what is a league?
It's a knot.
It's like... it's like 15 knots, Kalina, come on. Or like 100 cables, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Like, geez.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, let's see. On the land, the league is most commonly defined as 3 miles. Holy crap.
So 60,000 miles.
What's the deepest part of the ocean?
Like 7 miles.
What is it?
That one I do know off the top of my head. Take that, science nerds.
I thought it was way deeper than 7.
Dude, that's much less deep than I thought.
Yeah.
That's not 20,000 leagues at all, Jules Verne.
Dude, Tahoe is like 30 miles deep, right?
No. Just kidding. No. Okay, wow. I should have given you the benefit of the doubt on that one. I thought you were... now I feel stupid. Thanks a lot.
Okay, well, how deep is Tahoe? Is it actually a mile? Is that just something that I've misremembered?
I want to say it's like 1,500 feet or something.
That's not even close to a mile.
Depth. Oh, it's so close. 1,645.
Okay, what's a foot based on?
What's a
king's foot?
Maybe right? A Charles. Maybe a Henry. Maybe.
Is that real?
What? Well, it used to be. I don't know which king, but that's... Okay, so I've heard they used to have... they used to use an actual foot as a measurement. My sources are my memory from high school.
Okay, so how many... Is a king-size bed 2 feet long?
At least.
That's how many king's feet go into it.
Oh, I gotta kick you off the podcast. We can't keep this up. This hurts me. This hurts me physically.
Where does a king keep his armies?
In his sleeves.
In his sleeves.
You guys are all... Oh, no.
Did we just
get I'm editing all this out. All of it is going in the trash can.
I haven't gotten my mug yet. You can't fire me till I get my mug. Also,
where does
a
king keep his jammies?
Ooh, this one I don't know.
On his toasties.
Yeah.
I just made that one up. I don't know.
All right, everybody. That was part one of 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. If you'd like to hear more, part two is coming up next time. We'll see you later. And thanks for listening.
And Brian and Kalina may or may not be back, depending on if Taylor is sick of us or he likes us.
If you guys keep making army sleeveys joke, you're both kicked out.
That was fair one enough. Joke. The other one was jammies toasties.
Jammies
that's
toasties
even worse.
Is good.
No, it's not. No, it's not.